Change. We hear a lot about it. Change is constant, the only constant being death and taxes. I realize I've preached about change several times over the last 6 years that I've been here. Each time, Beacon faced a new phase of life. Most recently, it was 2 years ago as we faced leaving Plasmillardville to move here, and back when we were considering buying Shiloh United Church. I speak of change when we welcome new members to our congregation. New personalities among us tweak how any group works together. Now we have begun a long-range planning process, hoping to focus our energies and make good things happen. Again, we face change, but what we don't exactly know yet. Much as we might like church to be a place of stability within the fast-paced world around us, it happens here too. I was struck by the author Ronald Heifetz's lifting up changes we resist as loss. Sometimes change is a gain as well, but sometimes the losses loom larger in our hearts. This past weekend, I was at the Canadian Unitarian Council's annual conference and meeting in Thunder Bay. Of course, Thunder Bay does not have as much spring there yet as we have here in the Lower Mainland. The trees are just now starting to come out into leaf. I don't remember seeing any flowers, not even dandelions. And early spring is one of the big gains of moving here to Lotus Land from anywhere else in Canada. I moved here from St. John's, Newfoundland, which has a particularly late spring, thanks to the Labrador current cooled air surrounding the Avalon Peninsula. Yet, what do I talk about more? Not early spring, but no sunshine in the winter, even though I know I love that early spring. Losses seem to loom larger in my heart than gains at times. So how do we think about change? Author Marnie Caron writes in SportMed BC's online library that change is incremental and it has a progression. Her model for change has 5 stages. Pre-contemplation is before one recognizes that there is any need for change. And second is contemplation, thinking about it, recognizing that change is necessary, perhaps desirable. Preparation is when the individual figures out how to do it. And of course, action is when you actually do it. Finally, the last stage of this particular researcher's model is maintenance. Continuing with the changes while there's still a recognition and a remembering of the old days, the old ways. Making change is hard, hard work. It takes more than affirming friends and positive self-talk, writes Caron. Being successful with small changes is what leads to larger changes. Individuals, and I would argue organizations too, with a high degree of self-efficacy are the ones who can affect change. Self-efficacy is one's belief in your ability to effectively control events in your life. If you believe in yourself, you can do it. If you believe in yourself, you can move from the contemplation mode to the action mode and stay with your new habits. Building a strong belief in oneself is a slow and gradual process of experiencing accomplishments. It happens step by step. Heifetz, in our reading, referred to 2 kinds of change, technical and adaptive. No matter how complex the fix, technical change is the kind of change with known solutions. Authoritative expertise tells us how to do it within existing organizational structure and procedures. Adaptive challenges have to be addressed through changes in people's priorities, beliefs, habits, loyalties. It's not always easy to distinguish between these two, and specific situations can be a combination of both. The authors give an example of their own lives. Marty's mother is active and in good health at 95. She lives alone and still drives, even at night. Marty works near her home part of the time, so they have dinner together periodically. And now Marty is starting to notice new scrapes on the car each time she arrives for their dinner date. The technical component of this is get the scrapes fixed at the body shop. Easy. However, we all know there's an adaptive challenge here too. Being able to drive is a source of freedom and pride for this mom, as well as simple convenience. Even stopping driving at night would require an adjustment of mind and habit. Taking cabs and asking for rides is another way of thinking. He says, quote, "The adaptive part can be found in the loss this change would represent, a loss of an important part of the story she tells herself about who she is as a human being, namely that she is the only 95-year-old person she knows who still drives at night. It would rip out a part of her heart and take away a central element of her identity as an independent woman." No wonder adaptive challenges are sticky wickets. Particular size transitions in churches are difficult changes as well. They can involve moving from one style of ministry to another. Often it feels chaotic. Beacon has hovered at the 90 to 120 adult member stage for 25 years. Taking the next step seems to be a hard one. Maybe the chaos is too hard to bear. Maybe when it looks like the influence in the congregation is moving from the old standbys who have worked hard and diligently for many years to new people, to the minister, some people get uncomfortable. Where is our trust, really? Are we a sanctuary for those who happen to find us, or do we have a mission to be out in the community? Seems to me that size transitions in churches require adaptive change. It will take more than hope and intention to get us past our hurdles. Yet change has been an iconic part of our Unitarian tradition. No creed for us. We reserve the right to change the beliefs commonly held among us, and they have over the years. In the mid-19th century, we Unitarians moved away from the Calvinist doctrines of native depravity, predestination, and election of elite to heaven to a view of humans as being capable by nature of good, as well as ill, by their own decisions and efforts. They believed in free will and self-improvement, what was known as culture then. Ralph Waldo Emerson, part of that change, wrote, "Culture is the suggestion from certain best thoughts that people have a range of affinities through which they can modulate the violence of any master tones that have a droning preponderance in their scale and succor them against themselves. Culture redresses their balance, puts them among their equals and superiors, revives the delicious sense of sympathy." No wonder change is part of our well-known song, "Enter, Rejoice, and Come In." We're going to sing it in just a few minutes. You can turn to it in the hymnal now if you want. It's number 361. I used to think only of the physical movement and literal meanings in the song. "Come in to church," I always assumed. "Sing a song for the rest with the rest of us." It's going to be a couple minutes, Peggy. Okay. I used to think only of the physical movement and the literal meanings in the song. "Come in. Sing a song with the rest of us. Open my heart to others." Now I've begun to think of the verses as the stages of making change. "Enter, rejoice, and come in" could be that contemplation stage, thinking about changes I might like to make in my life. Perhaps opening ears and heart are the preparation for change. The word courage, after all, comes from the old French word for heart. Courage is the quality of mind or spirit that enables a person to face difficulty, danger, pain, or change. Facing change is a spiritual act, then. It seems to me that hearing my still small voice within and opening my heart and spirit to it would be necessary for me to make changes. It's not entirely analogous, but it's close enough to see that this rather simple song might describe a process of entering the change period. I wonder if one of the more difficult stages of change is recognizing that one is in a rut and that change might be helpful. Well, sabbaticals are all about a change of pace, and of course, my sabbatical was that. both parts of it. I knew I wanted out of my rut, but I didn't really know where I wanted to walk. I was reminded of my sabbatical canoe trip when I flew into Thunder Bay last Friday. We dropped out of the cloud right over the Kaministiqua River as it meanders into Old Fort William, just upstream of Thunder Bay. Having paddled it just last summer, I recognized it, and all the memories of the canoe trip flooded back. As we flew on past Old Fort William into modern Thunder Bay, I got all excited about paddling all over again. And now I want to paddle next summer with my friends from Thunder Bay to Montreal, or as much of it as I have time for. The lake's a bit daunting, let me tell you. Later in the conference, I co-led a workshop about my trip to Honduras with World Accord, which was the second part of my sabbatical. My friend Elaine, who had invited me to come along in the school construction project in memory of her late partner Jack, was there to help tell our story, and I showed some slides. I was reminded of the friends I'd made and the school we had built together with her friends and family. I was reminded of the difference that education makes in the lives of the children and adults of Honduras. Well, have I stepped out of my rut? Have I made any changes in my thinking or how I act? Maybe. It will take more time to know for sure. I do know I am more generous. That's an ongoing lesson I'm learning. I know I reconnected with nature. I know I have to go canoeing more. And I do, a couple times a week. Perhaps not too much has happened, but I have taken some small steps. Maybe the biggest thing I learned, though, was the courage to try new things. I had never traveled in Latin America before, so that was scary for me. I chose a pretty safe way to do it. I knew next to no Spanish either, but I made my way to a distant city and back by myself. By the end of the week of Spanish classes, I could buy a ticket by myself or food at the corner store. With comfort, actually. Last week, I stepped off onto the longest suspension bridge in Canada. Despite my fears of heights and swinging things, it was 600 feet long. Isn't that a football field or something? And 500 feet high. I did not look down. And I made sure I was first on the bridge so that the ones at the ends wouldn't go jumping around on it, which they did. Step by step, I'm learning to be a little more adventurous. I will close with this quotation from philosopher John Shar. The future is not a result of choices among alternative paths offered by the present, but a place that is created first in the mind and will, created next in activity. The future is not some place we are going to, but one we are creating. The paths are not to be found. They are made, and the activity of making them changes both the maker and the destination. Whichever path you choose, rejoice and open your ears and heart as you come in. Blessed be.